LeBron's not that good.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me on Twitter as always at redrock_bball. Today we're going to be looking back at Tuesday's games, talking about a couple of ankle sprains that went down to some key players, and previewing Wednesday's 10-game slate for DFS. Michael Bolton.
Let's get to it.
All right, that's a great idea. We will start, as we always do in these shows, with
Monstrous Line of the Night.
It goes to Marc Gasol of the Memphis Grizzlies. Gasol was fantastic as the Grizzlies narrowly went down to the Toronto Raptors. 27 points with 4 triples for Gasol. He also added 4 rebounds, 4 assists, and 2 steals with another 2 blocks there as well. Really efficient from the field, 10 of 14 and then 3 of 4 from the line. He did sprain his ankle late, but he said that he's fine. They're already doing some rehab. He's going to do rehab over the next couple of days because the Grizzlies don't play again until Friday. So some really good news there with Gasol. He's the 15th ranked player so far this season and the 9th ranked guy over the last 2 weeks, averaging 24 and 10 with 2 blocks on insane efficiency. For a bloke that was at 42% from the field last season, his last 8 games have given you 54% shooting, including 41% from 3. This could be somewhat of a sell high moment for Gasol if anyone's willing to give you back top 15 value, which they may not be, and not all sell highs are able to be achieved. But with what Gasol is doing at the moment, he's playing 37 minutes a night, so there is a risk of wearing down, of injury. He's played 37, 40, and 39 in his last 3 games. Coincidentally, he scored 27 points in all of those games, had 8 blocks across those 3 games as well. He is on an absolute red-hot streak. He could be a sell-high guy, but you're not likely going to get that off most people, any sort of top 12 or top 15 type value. I think he settles in as a top 30 player for the rest of the season with a bit of a dip in his recent efficiency numbers, but he has made significant strides in that area from where he was last season, and that has vaulted him up the rankings. I've drafted him in quite a few teams this season, and it's worked out relatively well for me so far, and I can only hope that it continues on in this vein. So Marc Gasol is your monstrous line of the night.
Waiver wire line of the night.
The waiver wire line of the night goes to the Duke, Wayne Ellington of the Miami Heat. Ellington was fantastic for the Heat. Not only did he do his usual thing, and that is go out there and knock down triples, Ellington was able to contribute in multiple categories, which is, again, a little bit of a surprise there. 32 minutes with 15 points, 5 triples, 5 rebounds, 3 assists, and of course the 5 steals really brings that value in for the Duke. This was a game with Tyler Johnson and the iron shoulder Goran Dragic out, and of course Dion Waiters, although I don't even know if we're ever going to see Dion Waiters this season. Ellington has been fantastic, a top 70 player over the last 2 weeks in 29 minutes, hitting 3 threes per game and averaging over 2 steals, so a real 3-and-D type of guy. But this is a player who averaged 0.7 steals per game last season, 0.6 the year before, 0.6 the year before that. So those 2 steals per game are significantly inflated and will likely come down, as will his minutes when these other players return. But for now, the Duke is putting up some strong numbers, especially with those threes, but those steal numbers are somewhat, I guess, fluky would be the best way of putting that, with some big numbers in those categories, which just isn't what he usually is able to produce for you from a fantasy point of view. Ever since I started this podcast, there have been people that you always ask me for advice, and it's usually, what guys do you want to plug into your fantasy lineup? What draft picks do I make? What trades do I make? I make my best efforts to help you guys with that. But another question that you guys should be asking, and that's when you're looking to place your bets, and that's where you should be placing your online bets. And the place that you need to be going to is MyBookie. It's one of the most trusted online bookmaking sites that are around. I know one of my listeners tweeted me the other day that they put on a very, very small wager on my bookie. They used the sign up promo discount code. And I think that now get me, I don't know if I'm right or wrong with this number, but they can correct me, tweet at me. I think they put a $10 wager on a big 12 leg parlay and ended up with $7,000. So fantastic for them to do that. So go ahead to my bookie. They have in-game wagering as well. And for everyone listening to this podcast, they also have the ability to bet the over under on fantasy points per game. Go to my bookie and enter the promo code locked on, and that will activate the offer where my bookie will match your initial deposit dollar for dollar up to $1,000. Put in $642 and my bookie will give you $642 extra into your account. So go to my bookie and enter the promo code locked on. You play, you win, and you get paid. Let's move on now to the deep leaguer of the night. It is Stan Johnson of the Detroit Pistons. Johnson remains coming off the bench for the Pistons, but he put in probably close to a career game in 28 minutes. He had 21 points on only 9 shots, so that's a little bit fluky, 7 of 9 shooting. 2 triples, 4 rebounds, 2 assists, 1 steal, and 3 blocks, and got to the line a lot as well. 5 of 8 from the free throw line. Johnson, and hold on to your hats, he is a top 100 player over the last 2 weeks, averaging 12 points with 3 rebounds, 1.7 steals and half a block. The big reason there, this is a bloke who has yet to top 38% from the field in any season in his career. The last 6 games, 52%, including 38% on threes and 62% on his twos. So there's significant room for regression there. The steals are real. He can block shots. He can get steals. We've seen this from Johnson a lot, but this recent run of shooting seems somewhat fluky. I'm not looking at him as a 12-team ad, but a 14-team guy. He's clearly outplaying the little dog, Glenn Robinson. The duck, Luke Kennard, is going to come back at some point. I think he probably takes Robinson's minutes in the rotation. But Johnson, if he can keep shooting at this level, then he is going to have 12-team league value. It just seems like it's probably unlikely, but in 14s and anything with 16 teams or deeper, you go and add Stan Johnson for how he's playing. He's improved his game, and just those steals alone can be really valuable in leagues those size. So Stan Johnson is your deep leaguer of the night.
Young Gun of the Night.
It goes to Trae Young of the Atlanta Hawks. Young had struggled in a few games recently, but a nice game here from him. 31 points in the victory over the Heat. 31 minutes, actually. 17 points, 2 triples, 5 rebounds, 10 assists, a steal, and a block on 5 of 12 shooting. Young is still a top 100 player this season, even though the last couple of games haven't been great, just shooting 32% over his last 7 with 12 points, still giving you 7 assists and a steal, but it's the threes which have really been lacking, only 25% from deep all of this season. You would hope that he could get at least into the low 30s, mid-30s in three-pointers made, which would give him back a 20-30 spot bump in his overall ranking. The assists are really nice, and they're clearly his best category by a significant margin, and then it's his free throw percentage, but there is scope for those threes and points to jump back up and push him back close to that top 50 sort of a range. I don't think he'll get to the top 50, but he should be able to maintain a pretty comfortable number inside the top 100. His minutes aren't going anywhere really. In fact, they've got room to improve, just 29 minutes per game so far this season. That will likely kick up as the months progress, but a good game from Young today against the Miami Heat in that big victory. A big victory over the Atlanta Hawks. Sorry, for the Atlanta Hawks in that big victory on the road against the Miami Heat. Getting my teams mixed up. I tell a man's not hot. The dud of the night goes to another rookie, one of my favorite rookies, but it has to be Jaren Jackson Jr., who played just 19 minutes after accumulating 5 fouls. 4 points, 2 rebounds, and a block for Triple J. He was 1 of 4 from the field. It was just one of those nights. Inconsistency is always going to get him. We've seen it plenty of times this season that when he gets into foul trouble, he picks them up in big, big bunches. The last game he played 30 minutes, the game before he played 35, and then 12. So he is all over the place. His average numbers are great. He's the 63rd ranked player this season. He was before today inside the top 20 over the last 2 weeks. That dropped out with his performance. But this is a great buy low opportunity. People freak out when they see a guy like this play under 20 minutes. Oh, is JaMychal Green taking his minutes? Oh, he's a rookie. Is he losing playing time now that everyone's healthy? Oh, he can't stay out of foul trouble. People will freak out. And while that's true, he does get into foul trouble. I'll take a bloke that can get into foul trouble and play 25 minutes a night and still be the 63rd ranked player. I'll take it, because in the nights he gets 30, he's a top 20 player. And then in the nights where he gets 20 minutes, yeah, he's a top 120 sort of a guy. I'll take it. But people freak out. So you go and you send your buy low offers to whoever has Jaren Jackson Jr., unless they are a person like me or many of you who really enjoys his game. Some people may have lucked into him, or they may be prone to panic moves. So it is worth investigating after a shitful performance like this from Triple J that you might be able to acquire him for a very, very reasonable price. So I'd be looking into that after this sort of performance, or really any performance where he gets significantly limited by foul trouble, because people do make panic moves. The plus-minus goats, the best net rating, went to Freddie VanVleet, hurt his ankle early in the game and then proceeded to return straight away and not miss a single shot. This is more of the VanVleet that we saw last season for this Raptors team, where he was able to, you know, lead that bench unit so well. He hasn't quite been there this season, battling numerous injuries, but good to see him getting back on track. He had a plus-92.4 net rating. The worst net rating goes to Frank Ntilikina of the New York Knicks, who looks atrocious. He was a -117.2. I still think they should be looking to see what they can get out of him, but you know, I don't like to write guys off this early, but we are getting real close to Frankie being an absolute write-off at this point. He's not there. I'll give him a little bit more time. I still have faith in him, but he has been absolutely atrocious. And I do blame some of it on Fizdale and the coaching, but a large portion of the blame goes to Ntilikina and his lack of offensive skill, talent, aggressiveness, and ability to just push himself into the right situation. So there is blame to go around, and you can blame Jeff Hornacek as well.
My name is Jeff.
I think there's been an issue with his confidence, and you know, you have to treat different players in different ways. And for a guy who obviously lacks that offensive confidence, you're not placing confidence in him will just compound the problem. I think we're seeing that with Ntilikina at the moment. It should go without saying that he shouldn't be anywhere near 10, 12, 14, or even 16 team leagues at this point. The only two injuries that we got today were Lonzo Ball and Marc Gasol. Both of those guys sprained their ankle. Lonzo just before halftime, Marc Gasol just before the end of the game. Lonzo had an x-ray. It was negative. The team said that he is day-to-day. Lonzo said he is definitely playing on Thursday, so that's good news. While Gasol sprained his ankle at the end of the game against the Raptors, he said it's fine, undergoing treatment already at this stage, and the Grizzlies don't play again till Friday. So it looks like we could have dodged a pair of bullets with Lonzo and Gasol both rolling their ankles, but potentially neither of them missing a game, so that's good news. Of course, if Lonzo is out, you'd look at Lance Stephenson to get a boost. Brandon Ingram's value would go up, and Alex Caruso would also see a jump. While if Gasol goes down, Jermichael Green gets a bump, and Ivan Rabb in deeper leagues would be a guy that would take some of those minutes, with Jaren Jackson moving to center, Rabb backing him up, and Green getting those power forward minutes. That would be my guess on how those things would likely go. But still up in the air to see whether that actually does go down that way. If you are looking for a new way to advertise your company, you could be mentioned on this podcast right now. Podcast listeners are 60% more likely to interact with the sponsors that they hear on their favorite shows. Our demographic is 98% male, higher educated, and higher earning sausage sizzles than your traditional media audiences. Have your company sponsor this podcast by emailing me at redrockfantasybasketball@gmail.com. All right. Let's go into these box scores now and have a look what we can try and get out of them by breaking down some of the information. There wasn't a huge amount in today's games, but there's still always some little things that we can try and get out of them. The first game we look at was the Knicks going down to the Pistons, 108-115. Timmy Hardaway did his thing, but everyone will want to hear about Alonzo Trier, who almost had the triple-double, 24-10-7 for Trier. No defensive numbers, but shot 7 of 11 from the field and got to the line a nice 12 times and hit 9 of those shots. It is really, really tough to work out David Fizdale's rotations. We've stressed that plenty of times. But this is 2 out of his last 3 games where he's played 30-plus minutes. The game in between, he played 23. He went 25-8-4 in 34 minutes against the Pelicans on 75% shooting. The next game against the Grizzlies, he had 10-4 in 23, not a 12-team line. And then today, the 24-10-7 in 31 minutes. But then the 3 games prior to that, 13-15 in 15 minutes. Today, Trey Burke played 15 minutes and 29 the game before. We saw Damo Dotson, who'd been banished to Narnia prior to today's game. He came in and played 20 minutes. There's no rhyme nor reason to what Fizdale does on a rotation basis. And while Trier is a guy, he is a two-way guy, but there is, you don't have to worry about the 45 days. He is going to get a full-time contract. There's plenty of dead weight on this Knicks roster that they can cut to keep him around, and they definitely will. Is he a must-roster player? Well, Over the last week, he's averaging 26 minutes a night. He's still not inside the top 130 despite averaging 17 points and shooting 62% from the field. So it just goes to show just how little of an impact he has in those other areas. Hasn't nabbed a steal at all in the last four games. Six rebounds, 3.8 assists, 1.3 threes. That's nice, but poor free throws as well during this time. I think he's worthy of a look in 14-team leagues, definitely, and maybe in a 12-team format you could have a look at it, but with the inconsistency in the playing time with what Fizdale does, with some inconsistency in his performance, and with perhaps a lack of contribution in some of the other categories, I wouldn't be labeling Alonzo Trier as a must roster 12-team league guy, but someone that you could have a look at, you grab, and then you see exactly what's going to happen over these next few games and see if he can develop some consistency. I have my doubts with it. I do like him as a player. But I do still have some doubts as to if he can maintain consistent standard league fantasy value. I think we're just a little bit away from that at this point with him. The other thing that he's doing this season, his block rate is significantly higher than where it was in college. He barely blocked any shots, and he's like almost over double that block rate this season versus what he was able to do against for Arizona. He's also shooting an astronomical 46% from three, and that is due to fall. So when we're looking at all these guys who are putting up numbers that are pretty crazy like that, there's always some things that are going to change, and I think there are a few things there from Trier that we can have a look at and feel relatively comfortable that they are going to dip, but he is putting together some pretty strong performances and looks solid. But that's enough on Alonzo Trier. Damo Dotson, as I said, was back in 17 points on 8 shots in 23 minutes. Who knows if he's going to continue to play? Well, Trey Burke, 15 minutes, 6 points. You can't rely upon Fizdale. Moutier struggled. He is not a 12-team league guy. While Kevin Knox is just bad, man. 4 points in 16 minutes for the Fort. Should be nowhere near your 12-team as well. Mitch Robinson fouled out halfway through the third quarter. The encouraging sign here is he had played 17 minutes halfway through the third quarter. But still only really a blocks guy. Well, Noah Vonleh also fouled out in 19 minutes of action. Blocked 3 shots, Vonleh had 6 and 7, but he has, after a couple of big games across the weekend, the last couple of games have been fairly muted. And he is still a 12-teamer, but a real fringe guy. Cantor was big again. I think it's a real sell-high moment here for Ennis. If you can try and get a top 50 guy back for him, I would absolutely be attempting to do that. For the Pistons, Reggie Jackson does well against the Knicks, and we saw that here. 21, 3, and 4 for Reg in 27 minutes. He's available in plenty of 12-team leagues, so go ahead and have a look if he is there. Blakey Griffin had 34 and 5, a good night there. Well, Drummond really struggled, and I have a feeling that the free throws are in his head again. He missed all 4 here. That's 1 out of his last 12 from the line. He is definitely back as being a king punt free throw guy. 6 points, 14 rebounds, a steal and 2 blocks. Only 3 of 9 from the field as well from Drummond. So it hasn't been a great little stretch here, especially with those efficiency numbers. And I think we are looking at a punt sort of a guy. Reggie Bullock, 7 and 5 in his 30 minutes, not a 12-team league player. I think you guys are pretty well aware of that with him. Next is the Atlanta Hawks. They beat the Miami Heat 115-113. The Wizard, Omari Spellman, had 14 points, 4 rebounds, and 4 steals. Got some extra minutes here because Vince Carter is now out of the rotation in Atlanta. The last 3 games, Vince hasn't played. Spellman taking that role. But with the Baptist John Collins back, with the Undertaker Dwayne Dedman and Alex Len there just aren't going to be enough minutes for Spellman. He's not going to be able to do this on a regular basis, so I don't think we should be overreacting here. The Undertaker had 8, 6, and 4 with a 1-1. He is a fringe 12-team league player, while Kent Bazemore in his bench role, another 26 minutes, 12-5 with 2 steals and a block. Now, the move to the bench here could have hurt his value. It hasn't so far, but I would be attempting to try and trade Kent Bazemore now because I do think that the playing time and the touches will decrease as the season progresses. So if someone's convinced that he can remain as a top 75 guy for the rest of the way, I'd be selling off on him. Jondre Bembry had 6, 4, and 1, but added 4 steals and a block. He is a fringe 12-teamer, probably more 14, while the artist, formerly known as Taurean Prince, 18 and 5 with 3 triples, a must-roster guy. If he's on your wire, please, please grab him, while the Baptist John Collins had 16 and 4. Kevin Huerta in that start had 8 and 1 with 1 assist and 2 triples. Not really a 12-team league guy at this point. I'd add him in 16-teamers, and let's see the minutes and the production start to progress. Joshy Richardson had 22, 8, and 4 with 5 steals as the Heat continued to flounder, while Dwayne Wade had his second consecutive big game, 18 points for Wade in his 27 minutes. Really just a points streamer, though. I think the efficiency and the usage will probably drop as the season goes on. But for now, Wade is providing some value. Bam Adebayo wasn't the same as his previous two games. He did get into some foul trouble. Only 14 minutes, 12 and 4 with 2 steals. I'm not convinced that he's a must-roster 12-team league guy, or they're going to start giving him 28 minutes a night now and limiting Hassan Whiteside. It could happen, especially with them getting their asses kicked, you know, relatively regularly here. So if you did add Adebayo, you could potentially consider holding him, but I don't really see it being something that's going to be consistent, but if you don't want to miss out on Bam, then you have him on your roster. Just wouldn't be. We'll see what happens next game when he doesn't get into foul trouble. As for Whiteside, 11 and 10 with 2 steals and 2 blocks. The free throws were bad. One of 7 from the line. Still a guy you hold. Well, Jim Johnson is a long way away from being a standard league player at this point, which I'm sure you're all aware of. The Raptors beat the Grizzlies 122-114. Van Vliet had 18 points on 6 of 6 shooting with 3 triples, 3 assists, and 3 steals. He was a back-end 12-team league guy at the end of or all of last season. Hasn't recaptured that form yet, but I think he could be a guy that helps with those steal numbers, with some assists and with some threes. Lowry had 24, 2, and 6, while the fun guy, Kawhi Leonard.
I'm a fun guy.
17, 10, and 5, 2 steals and a block for Leonard, while Dan Green dropped in 14 points. Ibaka went back to starting. He'd come off the bench the previous 3 games, had 16 points with a block in those 35 minutes, while Valanciunas only played the 14 minutes off the bench. It's going to be chop and change with those guys, we're well aware. Well, finally, Pascal Siakam had a bad game. It seems like it's been weeks coming. 10, 6, and 4 with a block. Yeah, you're still obviously holding him. I don't believe that he's going to maintain top 50 value for the rest of the season, but he's been a huge, huge surprise this season. On to the Grizzlies. Mike Conley continues to be excellent. 20 points with 6 assists, 3 steals, and 2 blocks, while Kyle Anderson is a must-roster guy, available in 36% of Yahoo leagues. 13 and 5 with a steal for Anderson looks a lot more comfortable. Garrett Temple and Shelvin Mack had solid games. They're more your 14 to 16 team league players, while Jermichael Green played 27 minutes because Triple J was in foul trouble. Didn't do a huge amount to really get me excited outside of really, really deep formats. The next game we look at is the Indiana Pacers and the Phoenix Suns. I talked yesterday in the DFS preview portion that your centers against the Suns are always a great option, and both Sabonis and Turner were in for a great opportunity, and they both went off. Miles Turner had 16 and 13 rebounds, which for those of you who have rostered him in the past, you'll be pretty impressed with the 13 rebounds. He also blocked 5 shots and was very efficient, and for everyone who trashes him and talks shit about him, he is the 33rd ranked player over the last 2 weeks. Now, all his value is basically coming from blocks, but in those last 6 games, he's averaging 8 boards and 2.5 assists. So he's not going to be this high usage, high scoring player, only averaging 13 points, but 3.3 blocks is bloody good. And if he's improving his rebounds to that value, then you know the numbers are there. There was a time when maybe he was getting into that fringe territory, but he's a pretty clear must-roster player as long as your expectations are in the right spot. Sabonis had 21 and 16 with 3 assists. He continues to be excellent. Well, Doug McDirt, 2 games in a row for McDirt. 21 points with 5 triples. Of course, he had nothing else. He's a points and threes streamer. Tyreek, 4 steals in 27 minutes starting for Oladipo. It looks like Oladipo will miss on Thursday as well. So you're going to get more value out of Tyreek, but it's not enough to consider him a must-roster 12-team league player. Well, Darren Collison had here back-to-back 11 assist games, 11 points with 11 dimes in this game. His value is there while Oladipo is sidelined. On to the Suns, DeAndre Ayton had a very empty 18 and 12. Did block a shot, though, and got to the line 6 times. So overall, it was pretty good. While Tony Warren Jr. didn't get ejected in this one, so he played 39 minutes, 25 and 7 with 2 triples, and Booker had 24 and 8 with 3 steals. Another 8 assists from Booker, who is thriving in this point guard role, except for the efficiency. McCall Bridges, it was a real turd. 2 points in 23 minutes for Bridges, 1 assist and 2 steals. He plays 32 minutes one night, he plays 23 the next night. It's hard to get a full gauge on how Kokoschkov is using him. Kokoschkov used some really, really confusing lineups of Jamal Crawford and Isaiah Kanan for way too long in this game, and it cost the Suns significantly. Bridges is, you know, a considerably better player than all of those guys, so it'll be interesting to see if they can at least play him those 30 minutes. I do think he's going to be a 12-team league player this season, and if I'm in a cushiony type position, I will hold on. But the production is going to wax and wane. Ariza had 6 points in 29 minutes, not a 12-team league guy, and bordering on not a 14-team league guy as well. And remember Ryan Anderson? He didn't play again. I just wanted to remind everybody that he started this season as the team's starting power forward. Why does it take these teams, you know, 10, 15 games to realize things that everyone pretty much realized 2 years ago? I don't get it. But yeah, Ryan Anderson out of the rotation, and I doubt we will ever see him again for this team. The next game we take a look at is the last game of the day. The Denver Nuggets blew out the Lakers 117-85. The future MVP, Kyle Kuzma, had his second consecutive big game, 21 points. I'd be selling the shit out of him. I'd be trying to get some top 70 value back for Kuzma. If there's a Lakers fan in your league, if there is a future MVP believer in your league, I'd be trying to trade him after these performances.
LeBron James.
LeBron had 14 and 7, had 2 steals, 2 blocks, and 2 assists, but it was far from a good LeBron game. While JaVale McGee only played 16 minutes, but had 4 blocks. Just a disaster all around this game for the Lakers. Lonzo only played the 18. He was all working on a pretty good line, 7-5-2 in those 18 minutes. There are people still holding Josh Hart in 12-team leagues. Please do not. He needs to go. He needed to go about 3 weeks ago. There's no reason for him to be a rostered player. On to the Nuggets. Malik Beasley got the big minutes here. 36 of them, 20 points with 4 rebounds and 2 steals. There's no consistency in his production or playing time, so not much to look at there. While Monty Morris added 7 assists with 0 turnovers. Just the king of the assist-to-turnover ratio category. Really good stream option for 14 and probably 12 team is 4 assists. The Blue Arrow does well against the Lakers and did it again, 23 and 4. And no Gaz Harris in this one, so Torrey Craig started and didn't do much. Jokic played only 23 minutes. He had 14, 7, and 7 with a steal and a block. He didn't need to play. He didn't play at all in the fourth quarter because this game was out of hand, while Paul Millsap had 20 and 11 with a pair of blocks, but just an absolute destruction. I think that Juancho Hernangómez should remain the starter for this team, even when Farton Will Barton returns. That does not mean that Juancho is a 12-team league player. I don't really think he's a 12-team league guy at this point. He's producing solid enough numbers, but there's a couple of big ones in there. There's some not-so-great ones. But to be fair to Juancho, over the last month, he's the 132nd ranked player. Over the last 7 games, he's the 91st ranked player, averaging 14 and 7 with 2 triples. The free throws are nice. The threes are nice. They're the categories that he's really producing for you. So there's nothing overly sexy about what he's doing, but there is some back-end value here for Juancho. But I do think that he should remain in that starting lineup when Barton returns. We'll just see exactly how that will be or when that does go down. But a real blowout for the Nuggets to end the day for us here. All right, guys, let's take a look at some players who may be able to be acquired as a buy low or a sell high guy. Now, looking at their performances over the last couple of weeks. We'll start with some guys who you might consider buy low players at the moment. Over the last 3 weeks, Damian Lillard is the 31st ranked player. He's playing 36 minutes a night and scoring 27 points, but his shooting is way off, under 39% from the field, only 0.7 steals during that time as well. So there are many people who are slaves to rankings, whether that be the rankings through Basketball Monster or whatever's happening on Yahoo or on ESPN, and they'll see that Lillard has dropped back off, and you're looking at a guy who's a top 10 to top 12 sort of a player who is underperforming expectations a little bit this season. His steal rate is down, and over the last couple of weeks, that efficiency has really dropped off. So if you can acquire him for anybody in that, say, 20 to 25 type of a zone, maybe a Drew Holiday type of player, I would be attempting to do that and get Lillard back, because I'm pretty sure that efficiency will jump back up. Another guy who is also a little bit undervalued at the moment with a little bit of a rough patch is Bradley Beal, the 46th ranked player over the last 2 weeks. It's coming in a lot of minutes, 37 minutes and 21 points. But his peripheral numbers are a little bit down, especially his free throws, only 74% from the line on 6 attempts. So that makes that a relative negative as well, 47% from the field during that time. He's still getting you 4.7 assists, but his steals are down. And weirdly, Beal this season is blocking a lot of shots. It's only 0.4 last season. He's at 1.2 blocks per game this year. But it's really that free throw percentage, the 74%, which is below average, which is dropping his numbers down pretty considerably. He's also rebounding the ball at a below average rate, 3.9 boards per game. I think you can expect Beal to jump back up from here, perhaps be a top 40, top 35 sort of a player. So there's a little bit of improvement in what he can do as opposed to where he's been over the last couple of weeks. The player situated one spot behind him on the rankings is Ben Simmons, who over the last 2 weeks is the 47th ranked player, averaging 17, 7, and 8 with 1.3 steals and one block per game. Again, people who look at these rankings will be a little bit disappointed with that number from Simmons. Part of that reason is his free throw percentage is well down. He's at 60% for the season, 57% over these last couple of games on significant volume. So that does drop his overall ranking down. Now, if you're having Simmons, you're generally in a punt type scenario. So overall rankings don't really take that, or they don't at all take that into consideration. So that makes his numbers look a lot lower. But you turn the punt setting on, which we have over on Basketball Monster, and you'll see Simmons' numbers rise pretty considerably. I still think he can get better there in that area and be a 65% type of a shooter from the line. His numbers aren't too dissimilar to what they were last year, even with Jimmy Butler around, so I don't think that's too much of a concern. Probably one of the biggest buy-low guys at the moment is Nikola Jokic, who over the last 2 weeks is the 49th ranked player, only 30 minutes per game for Jokic, averaging 14, 9, and 7.5. He's not blocking any shots, only 0.3, and only hitting 39% of his overall field goals, which is obviously well down. This is a guy that 2 years ago was at 58%. He was at 50 last season. He's also only shooting 77% from the line and not getting to the line as well. So there are a number of things that have really dropped his numbers down. A lower field goal percentage, 21% from three, a lower free throw percentage, a lower free throw rate. All those things are impacting his overall value, as well as his blocks only at 0.3 over the last seven games. So he is a significant buy low to me. I still view him as a top 10 talent. He's the 15th ranked player over the course of the season. And those things, the field goal percentage, the free throw attempt rates, and the blocks, a reasonable person would expect all of those things to go back up. A lot of criticisms on Jokic. He's not scoring enough. He's not aggressive. He still has a higher usage this season than what he did last season. 25% this season, 24.4 last season, 24.1 the year before. So he can still be a top 12 sort of a player, even with sub 25% usage. We've seen it for two consecutive seasons. And it's not a usage issue that's dropped him down to 49th over this last time. In fact, his usage is up over 25 in those last seven games. It's that efficiency numbers and the blocks that have dropped off, which have really pushed his numbers down the list. Jonny Wall is the 58th ranked player over the last couple of weeks. He is a strong buy low player. It's fueled by a terrible 61% shooting from the line, so that's due to return. 21, 4, and 8 with a steal, and the excellent 1.6 blocks that Wall is providing in that time is offset by a horrible free throw percentage. In fact, he is at just 68% over the course of the season. He shot 73 last year, but the 3 years before that, 80, 79, and 79%. So I think we can expect a decent level of improvement, which will bump that ranking back up inside the top 25 and probably inside the top 20. So I think that John Wall, with that free throw percentage, is somewhat of a buy low player. Joshy Richardson also coming in as the 66th ranked player over the last 2 weeks. I think he is a bit of a buy low guy. The shooting's not quite there. And one of the things that makes Richardson so valuable from a fantasy point of view are his blocks. He was at 0.9 last season, but over the last six games, he has not been at that same level. Only two blocks in his last six games, really dropping that number off. His free throws down at 74% as well when he was at 85% last season and is at 84% this year. Really dropping that overall number. People are not, they don't buy into Josh Richardson as a top 50 sort of a player. He is, so you should be trying to acquire him if someone's pissed off with the recent level of performances. Even though he is still scoring 20 points per game, that overall ranking number has dipped down. LaMarcus Aldridge is showing signs of improvement, but he's still the 84th ranked player over the last 2 weeks, mainly because he's shooting 42% from the field. He has gone at over 50% in three of his last four games. He's averaging 17 and 12 with a block. Those numbers are going to start to come up. So the buy low window hasn't completely shut, but it's getting pretty close to it. So if you're going to make an acquisition of Aldridge, I think now is the time that you should be doing it. The Blue Arrow, Jamal Murray, is the 87th ranked player. He is averaging 16-4-6. His steal numbers are very low, 0.6 steals, so that's part of the reason that his numbers are down, and only 41% shooting from the field, including 34% from three. I think both of those numbers can go back up, and that has the potential to jump him 40 or 50 spots. His minutes are through the roof as well. And the last buy low guy I want to look at is De'Aaron Fox, who's the 130th ranked player over the last 2 weeks. He's shooting just 39 from the field and 69 from the line, including 25% from three. I said plenty of times that his efficiency wasn't going to be able to stick at the level that it was at. He's at 47 and 38 from the field and three respectively for the season, but I didn't expect it to be this poor. And I think there's significant room for improvement here for Fox. So if people think that this is a full regression back to what he did in his rookie season, I wouldn't be buying that, and I'd be happy to try and take De'Aaron Fox off their hands if they are looking to move on from him. On the flip side, guys who are sell high players or guys who are overperforming what I think they'll do, Justin Holiday, the number one, he is at the 28th ranked player over the last 2 weeks, averaging 15 points with 6 rebounds, 3 assists and 4 triples, shooting 46% from 3. I don't think that the minutes at 35 per game are going to stick. I don't think that the 46% shooting from 3 is going to stick. And I don't actually think his field goal percentage at 44% is going to stick. There are going to be minutes lost when Portis, Markkanen and Dunn return, and some of that shooting is going to drop off. So there are people who believe he'll be able to stick it out. I don't think that he can do it, but if you can acquire a top 50 player back for Justin Holiday, or even a top 70 player, I'd be looking to do it. Al Horford is the 29th ranked player over the last 2 weeks, averaging 12, 6, and 3. And his numbers are really inflated by the fact that he's averaging 2 blocks per game in that time. He's outside the top 50 for this season. His field goal percentage is way up recently as well, 54 from the field and 86 from the line. But it's that elevated block number. It's the high 3 percentage numbers that are coming in for Horford. And I think that if someone's buying into him as a top 30 guy, I'd be willing to sell. I'd also be willing to sell his former Hawks teammate, Paul Millsap, who's the 33rd ranked player over the last 2 weeks, mainly because he's averaging 2 steals and 1.6 blocks and shooting 56% from the field. These are back at Atlanta Hawks Millsap type numbers. He has never been this level of a shooter, and those steals and blocks are also, you know, well above things that he's ever done in his career, really inflating his production. It's coming in only 26 minutes, and those numbers are set to decline. So Millsap, I think, is a fringe 12-team league or 10-team league guy, probably a 12-team league player, but these numbers as a top 50, a top 40 sort of a player are unrealistic to expect him to continue there. The number 36 ranked player is Bojan Bogdanović, really thriving at the moment because pretty clearly what's happening here. He's shooting 62% from the field and 56% from three. He doesn't do anything else apart from score. And when those numbers revert back to closer to career norms, 76 true shooting is not going to continue. He's going to fall 70, 80 spots perhaps in the rankings. So if you can get any sort of value, any sort of top 75 value back for Bojan, I'd be inquiring. Jabari Parker, the 37th ranked player, he's going to lose touches and playing time to Markkanen, to Portis, and to Dunn. 19 and 8 in 34 minutes. He could go down to 25 minutes when all those guys return. So if you can get any sort of top 50 or top 60 value back for Parker, I would highly advise doing that. Might not be possible though. Dennis Schroeder, the 38th ranked player, averaging 18-4-5. Some of those games have been coming with Russell Westbrook back, so I think you can get value here if the person believes he can continue to produce these numbers even with Westbrook back in the lineup. So I think Schroeder is a significant sell high if you can get top 60 sort of numbers back from him. The number 55 ranked player over the last couple of weeks is Derrick Rose, averaging 19-3-4, but still shooting an astonishing 58% from the field, 94 from the line and 42% from three. He's only giving you 4 assists, 1.3 triples and 0.3 steals. So those peripherals aren't keeping him up. It's purely to do with his percentage numbers. His biggest contribution category is his field goal percentage and his free throw percentage, two numbers that are going to dip significantly. So if you've got any D Rose super fan in your league, trade him. Try and get top 50, top 70 value back because he will not be able to keep this level of efficiency going. It's just impossible for anybody to keep that level up. Tristan Thompson is your 67th ranked player over the last 2 weeks, averaging 13.5 and 13.5 with 55% shooting. It's more the 32 minutes that I don't think are going to stick for Thompson all season. Any sort of top 90 value that you can get back for him in a trade, that's what I'd be looking to do. And the last guy I want to talk about as a sell high option is Trevor Ariza. 39 minutes per game over his last 4 games. 2.3 threes and 2 steals. Not shooting the ball well, but his value is entirely influenced by those 2 steals per game. The 39 minutes isn't going to stick, and I don't think 2 steals per game is either. So any sort of top 100 value that you could try and acquire for Ariza, it might not be possible, but I would be looking to do it because his numbers are insanely inflated. That does it for another buy low, sell high segment for this week. I hope you guys enjoyed it. All right, let's get in now and talk some DFS action for Wednesday. But of course, starting with the perfect lineup over on DraftKings: Mike Conley, Josh Richardson, Stan Johnson, Domantas Sabonis, Marc Gasol, Alonzo Trier, Paulie Millsap, and Miles Turner. You'll notice both Sabonis and Turner in the perfect lineups. A total of 361.75 for a cost of $49,600. On FanDuel, your perfect lineup was Conley, Van Vliet, Trier, the Duke Wayne Ellington, Joshy Richardson, the Fun Guy Kawhi Leonard, Domantas Sabonis, Paulie Millsap, and Miles Turner for a total of $393, and that cost $59,200 dues. 10-game slate for us today. We're going to be focusing on DraftKings pricing in today's show. The first one we look at is the Atlanta Hawks and the Charlotte Hornets. The Hawks on a back-to-back after that big victory over the Miami Heat. There are a ton of absolute blowout spreads currently listed. At this point, there are five games with spreads of over 12 points at this stage, which is an astonishing amount, which means, you know, stacking those games in GPPs is relatively risky. This is one of them, with the Hornets favored by 12.5 and the total 233 points. At point guard, Trae Young's at 6,600, a nice 43-pointer from Young today. I think he's worth a look, but there's a lot more value on DraftKings in other games. So with this sort of blowout as a possibility, I'm not sure Young at 66 is great value. Tone Parker's there, while Kemba Walker at 93. We know that Kemba's going to get you 40, but that's if the game stays close. Now, if the game doesn't stay close, he's probably not going to be able to get that. So there is an element of risk in using Kemba. And then you got Jeremy Lin at 5,000, probably priced a little bit too high against his former team. Malik Monk's at 3,300. He's got that 30-point upside. That's a weird tournament-y type of a guy. I don't really hate that one. While Kevin Huerter at 33, only 11 points today, but that was almost as bad as it can get. I actually like Huerter here as a cheap option on DraftKings. Nick Batum is down to 4,800. It's getting really tempting, that price, but I don't think I'm falling for it. Has played very well against the Hawks before, 32 average over the last 3 games, but he just cannot get anything going in this new offense under James Borrego. So probably a fade. While Kent Bazemore at 49 is playing all right, it's not translating into big DFS numbers, so I think we'll leave him and DeAndre Bembry alone. Jeremy Lamb at 6,400, that price is more in line with his production, so it takes away a big chunk of the edge there. I like formerly the artist formerly known as Taurean Prince at 5,100. I think that's really strong. Marv Williams is at 45. I'm not going to bank on him or chase his points. I think the minutes could come tumbling back down in this game, and Miles Bridges and Michael Kidd-Gilchrist aren't really going to do it for me. The big men, you've got The Undertaker at 4,000, Dwayne Dedman. I do like him for tournaments. He had 25 today and only 25 minutes, which brings you value. That 4,000 is a very, very good price for The Undertaker. And I love the Baptist, John Collins, at 6,100. Should be getting you 30 to 35 points without really breaking too much of a sweat. Cody Zeller, Alex Len. You've got Frank Kaminsky, who's taken over the backup center position for the Hornets. Probably not going to be utilizing those guys all that much. For the FanDuel options here, I like formerly quite a bit. 5,700 for Taurean Prince is a really, really good price. I'm into that. I think Dedman at 48 is worth looking at. The Baptist at 72. Kemba at 97 is pushing too high. And Trae Young at 7,000 is okay without being a great option. The New York Knicks and the Philadelphia 76ers. The Sixers are favored by 12.5, another one of these huge spreads. The total is 227.5. Joel Embiid will be pushing for that monstrous line of the night. And big men against the Knicks tend to go big. The Knicks are also on a back-to-back as well, so there is some some room for him to really put up a big one. At point guard, Benny Simmons is at 8,700. Simmons, is his lowest score over his last five games has been 41 points, so that is a rock-solid floor. Now, his highest score is just 54, so not so much of a ceiling, but I really like Simmons for cash here. Strong value against the Knicks. Landry Shamet at 3,200. He's giving you 20 a night with his ability to knock in threes. Not a bad guy to look at, although his upside's a little bit muted. Whereas Trey Burke, I don't know how you can put any trust in what he's going to do. 7 points today, 4,900. You can have that one. While Manny Moutier at 47, Frank Ntilikina, TJ McConnell, not interested. Although McConnell is a guy who does big things against the Knicks. I don't know why. 22 points. He averages a point per game against the Knicks. He's had a triple-double against them last season. If you want to get real sexy, maybe you do throw McConnell into a tournament just for whatever weird bullshit magic narrative he seems to have against the Knicks. Maybe you could consider that. Timmy Hardaway is at 66, just a rock-solid guy who's going to get you 32-33 most nights. JJ Redick's at 52. I think he's also that 26-27-point rock-solid player. Really good options for cash, both of those guys. While Jim Butler, General Saunders, at 7,800, really exploded last game. 64 DraftKings points in that one. Had been a little bit lacking prior to that, and that price increase probably turns me off just a little bit here. While Alonzo Trier at 38, that's pretty bloody hard to pass up, to be honest, given how well he's played. There's always going to be issues with how Fizdale runs the rotation, but I don't think you can really pass up Trier at 3,800. Big numbers potentially coming his way. 6,800 for Enes Kanter. Kanter's actually done all right against Embiid in the past. 36 points the last three times against the Sixers. And 6,800 is not a terrible price, but I love Embiid. 11-2 here. He gets you 55 without even trying, really, and has 70-80 point upside in this matchup. The Moose, Mike Muscala, Noah Vonleh, I don't see value in either of those guys. While Mitchie Robinson at 32, yeah, I'd say that's probably going to be a bit of a no from me for old Mitch as one of your center options. Unfortunate for him. If we go across now and take a look at FanDuel for this game, I forgot to mention old baby neck Wilson Chandler as well. He is an interesting GPP upside guy because his price is so low. The same on FanDuel where he's at 4,500. And then you've got Embiid at 11-1, who I absolutely love over on FanDuel. Hardaway solid at 7,000. Trier at 37 also looks pretty good over on FanDuel, as does the 8,700 that they have there for Benny Simmons. So FanDuel has some pretty good value in this game, but of course, yeah, when we're looking at it, there is still some issues with the potential blowout that could occur in this game, and that could limit some of those things. But the Sixers haven't really been a team in the past to really push for blowouts that much or limit their starters significantly in those sort of scenarios. So there's a little bit of value in this game, I think, on both DraftKings and on FanDuel. The next game we look at, the Utah Jazz and the Brooklyn Nets. There is no spread at the moment because Vegas was waiting for the Donovan Mitchell news. You don't have to wait for the Donovan Mitchell news because he is in and ready to go. The Jazz need to turn things around pretty seriously here. Over on DraftKings, where are we? There we go. The point guard matchup, Dinwiddie's at 6,200. He's putting up numbers every night. I'm happy to use him here. While the Don at 7,300. I think Mitchell's really only a cash guy, a tournament guy at this point. D'Angelo at 7,600. Weirdly enough, I feel more comfortable using D'Angelo Russell than Donovan Mitchell at this point, at least for consistency. Exum, Rubio, Napier. Rubio does very well against the Nets, a 37-point average the last three times. I'm not sure I want to go into that, especially at 6,900.
Giggity!
But worth noting that he does get a bit of a spike against Brooklyn. The Blue Swimmer, Alan Crabb, Joe Harris, I don't like either of those guys. While Joe Ingles is struggling his way along, or so it seems, still averaging 31 DraftKings points over the last three, and at 5,900, that gives Ingles an element of value. The other wings, Damari Carroll and Jay Crowder, with their old pointing Spider-Man meme. Jay Crowder, 4,600, is up and down, more down than up. And Carroll's nothing. Carroll's also questionable in this game, so I don't really see any value with those guys. I do like Rondé Hollis-Jefferson here. 5,200 for Rondé. I think this is an opportunity for him to go for 30. He struggled against the Jazz in the past, but he is starting now. I do like it, especially for tournaments, whereas Derek Favors for cash at 48, I think that's rock solid for cash with very little upside. Gobert's down at 7,700. He is a 40-point average against the Nets the last three times out, so I think he's worth looking at, looking to break out of his slump. But his last couple of games haven't been great. Well, Jarrett Allen's at 55, and I'd only be looking at Allen as a tournament guy, not really super keen on him for cash. On FanDuel, it's Rondé again at 58 as a tournament player. Gobert at 85 looks okay without being spectacular, and I think the 5,800 for Jingle and Joe Ingles looks pretty nice. D'Angelo at 77 and Dinwiddie at 65. I think the 65 for Spencer Dinwiddie is also a pretty good price over on the old FD. The next game we take a look at, the San Antonio Spurs and the Minnesota Timberwolves, one of the close spreads here, the lowest of the listed spreads. 4.5 points to the Timberwolves, and the total is 217.5. Andrew Wiggins hasn't closed out either of the last two games. Tom Thibodeau said that he will close out majority of games, so we imagine that he gets back into the closing lineup for this one. At point guard, Jeff Teague.
My name is Jeff.
6,100 for Teague, averaging 31.5 over the last three. I will absolutely 100% take that. It's a really strong matchup for him as well. Derrick Rose at 6,400. The numbers are a little bit down for Rose, under 30 over the last five. I'd take Teague at $300 less over Rose here without any real hesitation. Brittany Forbes at 42 is a limited upside, low floor guy, while Derek White, who showed flashes last game, I think I'll need to see a little bit more before I get into him. Pat Mills also had a pretty good game, but still only netted 24 DraftKings points, which isn't enough for me to get excited about. Andy Wiggins, very few people are going to be on Wiggins here. He is at 5,600. That's a very low price, and for how shit he has been, he still had 28 points last game. I think a 30-point performance is far from a crazy expectation from Wigo. I'm in on him. I think he's worth looking at more tournaments because he is so shit and inconsistent, but he's been producing at a better level than, I guess, the general narrative, at least last game, is mentioning. He did have those real couple of turds over the weekend. That 2-point performance, a real crowning jewel. DeMar DeRozan, 8,500, rock solid, 40-pointer for DeMar. You should feel relatively good about him getting to that level. Ballinelli, no thank you. Small forward, Rudy Gay, 5,900, no consistency in minutes or production. Hard to utilize him at that sort of a salary, but Bob Cove is the opposite. Lots of minutes, lots of production, 44 points last game. He's at 6,300. If you don't get 30 from him, I reckon you'd be pretty disappointed. And that's a really rock solid floor from Bob. I think he's worth looking at there. The big men scenario, you got Townsy at 9,400. I'm in on Towns. That's a $600 price drop from last time for Townsy. I think a 45-pointer is in play. There is no Pau Gasol in this one, so LaMarcus Aldridge at 8,300. The shooting is back to a degree over the last four games at least. I think another 40-ish from LaMarcus is in play. He has torched Towns in the past, averaging 50 over the last three times. Not an unrealistic expectation here. Jakob Poeltl, Taj Gibson, Dario Saric, your other big men, and I don't really want anything to do with any of those guys. On FanDuel, I like Towns, I like Teague quite a bit over there. DeRozan at 88 looks okay, as does Covington at 69, but the punt on Wiggins isn't quite as appealing on FanDuel. He comes in at 6,500 over there, and Rose at 65, and probably still not as appealing as he has been in the past. Aldridge at 8,500 still. I think there is some significant 50-point upside here for LaMarcus on both sides, making him a relatively decent value proposition. The Chicago Bulls and the Milwaukee Bucks, another large-ass spread. The Bucks are 13.5-point favorites. The total is 228.5. The fact that this is the largest spread on the books does make, and I think last time the Bucks won by about 180 points, so it does make this quite risky to utilize players from this game. Zachy LaVine's at 8,100. It doesn't really matter if it's a blowout or not. He's going to jack his shots up, and he's going to get you around 40. So he is a relatively consistent player, while Eric Bledsoe at 6,900.
Giggity!
Playing well. I'm not sure he's quite justifying that price. Brogo at 56, tons of minutes. If this was an 8-point spread, I'd be all about Brogdon, who's getting 34 points over the last three. But one thing we do have to look at with Brogdon is his minutes have stayed relatively high, even in the blowouts. So I don't despise him at all. I actually think he could turn into a sneaky blowout-proof type of a player in this matchup. Ryan Archer-Jackanoe's at 3,900. He's averaging 21 over his last five, including a 36-pointer last time out. That's really the high watermark there, but a 22 or 23-point performance from Arch is not crazy. It's also not 100% likely. wings. Chrissy Middleton's at 7,500, has torched the Bulls 43 over the last three games. Yeah, pretty solid option here. Far from a terrible one, that's for sure. Chandler Hutchison, Paddy Connaughton, Justin Holliday. We have to talk Justin Holliday here. 5,400 for Juzza. He's averaging 45 over the last three, just playing a shit ton of minutes. This could get really ugly, which maybe limits him somewhat, but at that price, I think he's relatively blowout proof. Jabari Parker had 35 points last time out, but at 6,600, even though that was a really good game from Jabari, especially early on, I'm not so sure, but 41-point average his last five games, Jabari. A ton of minutes. It is going to come down a little bit with Chandler Hutchison back. I think he's more of a tournament guy than really anything else. And then the big men. Very few people are going to be on the block. Panther Wendell Carter, who can't stay out of foul trouble. He's averaging only 20 points over the last three. He's down to 5,000 as a result of that. I think there is legitimate 35-point upside here, but it would just be a tournament play. While Brook Lopez at 4,800, big men do very, very good things against the Bulls, and I love that price for Lopez. Therefore, I really enjoy having him into my lineup, because he does also get to go up against his brother, Robin, who should not be in your DFS lineups. On FanDuel, I like Brogdon, I like Yanni. I don't really like Yanni that much on DraftKings. He's okay, but there are better options. I like Lopez, I like Middleton on FanDuel, and Bledsoe at 7,400 I think is a relatively good option too, but we do have to be careful about the real potential of an absolute ass-kicking here by the Bucks over the Bulls. The next game is the Cleveland Cavaliers going to take on the Oklahoma City Thunder. The Thunder are favored by 13, another huge blowout potential game, a total of 216 points. The Cavs have ruled out David Nwaba, they've ruled out Georgie Hill, and they've ruled out Slammin' Sammy Decker, so Larry Nance Jr. should be getting another start as the starting power forward. We know what he was able to do last game, put up a really, really strong performance in that game. And again, we have to wait to see exactly what Larry Drew is going to do with his lineups. But at this point, it's really hard to expect anything else apart from Larry Nance starting at power forward and producing a fair chunk of DFS value. Let's look at the point guards. Schroeder is at $6,000. He's giving you around 30 a night. I think he's totally fine in this matchup. While Westbrook at 10.9 is a very, very sexy price. I think 65 points plus is a realistic ceiling, and even 55 could be a realistic floor. So I love Russell in this matchup. Jordy Clarkson's at 51. Not really happening. While the young bull, Padawan Colin Sexton, 5,700. The shots didn't go in and the production wasn't there. That's always the risk with Sexo. So maybe as a tournament guy, but I wouldn't feel super confident in cash at that sort of a salary. Wings, Rocket Rodney Hood, 4,600. It's giving you around 25 a night, which is not bad at that price. I think you can do a lot worse than Hood. He is inconsistent, but to be fair to him, the last week or so, he's had a lot more consistency in his game with all the injuries the Cavs are sustaining. So not someone that I actively dislike here. Kyle Korver got hot last game. I wouldn't be really banking on that happening again. While Timotei Luwawu-Cabarro started last game for Oklahoma City, played 21 minutes, but only the 15 DraftKings points. So not a high priority option here. Jeremy Grant at 43, really love this option for Grant, especially with Nerlens Noel questionable. That would mean Patrick Patterson and Grant would have to play some center minutes, which would push his value higher. So I do like Grant quite a bit at 4,300. Chetty Osmond's at 49, just a tournament guy. While Paul George at 89, love that. That's a really, really strong price for Paulie. Had 55 last game, even with Russell Westbrook around. Yeah, big on Paul George at that salary. And then the big men, Nance at 5,300, almost impossible to go past him with these injuries. Tristan Thompson's at 63. He's been giving you pretty consistent numbers as well, and I like him with these injuries as well. While Steve-O Adams, 6,700, a good opportunity for him. He averages 43 points against Tristan Thompson and the Cavs. So I think there's just tons of big man value in this game in particular. Nance, Thompson, and Adams all absolutely 100% in play. Over on FanDuel, you got Nance again with our significant value. Westbrook and Schroeder, Hood, Thompson, Adams, very much the same sort of names. But yeah, Nance at 6,000, we should be pretty aggressive in targeting him over on FanDuel in this matchup with the absence of Decker and Nwaba and of course Kevin Love. Still not ready to go, so some real value opening up there with those Cavs guys, especially Thompson and Nance. Let's move on to the next game, we're looking at the Washington Wizards and the New Orleans Pelicans. At least we don't have a high spread in this game. The Pelicans favored by 6.5. The total is an absolute monster, 241.5. So if you're looking for a game to stack, this is it. Huge total and low spread, considering apart from the Wolves-Spurs game, every other game is a double-digit spread game of the games that we actually have the spreads out for. So, you know, real stackable stuff here for the Wizards and the Pelicans. The point guards, Drew Holiday's at 8,400, just rock solid. Lowest score over his last five is 36, which is a fantastic floor. Really love this matchup as well. Point guards have put up really big numbers against the Wizards so far this season. Well, Johnny Wall at 91. You can criticize John Wall as much as you want, and you should, but 46 points over his last three. His last three against the Pelicans, he's averaged 49. He's coming off a 60-pointer. Pelicans, point guards against the Pelicans have put up some pretty good numbers as well. I'm in on John Wall here. Satoransky at 34, probably not. Rivers, Jackson, or Clark. No. Each one more. $5,000, just not reliable enough. He's coming off a 7-point performance. Kelly Oubre at 42 is just a tournament guy, and even then, not really a strong one. While Bradles Beal at 8,000, just a 40-point machine. I do worry a little bit here because he's played such big minutes, 45 and 50 the last two games, that there might be a concerted effort to drop his playing time. But he does average 41 a game over the last three contests against the Pelicans, so that's a positive. I just think you'll probably find better options around. One of those better options could be Nick Mirotic, who's at 6,900, averaging 35 over his last five games, really putting up good numbers. I like this matchup. And Otto Porter also getting into business. 35 points over the last five. The minutes are up. The production's up. 5,900 seems relatively rock solid. And whatever that bullshit was between him and Scotty Brooks seems to be over. Dwight Howard is out, so Markieff Morris at 5,100 I think becomes a very good option. He's averaged 36 points the last three games with Howard out, playing better than Oubre and getting a ton of minutes. I really like Markieff here. Jeff Green and Darius Miller, Wes Johnson, they're not working for me. Love Tone Davis, big price player, love the value here. 11-4 for Tone, this should be a 60-plus for him. Really, really think he is a strong cash and tournament guy. Well, Julius Randle at 67. With Davis around, it's a little bit hard to reliably use him. Same with Thomas Bryant at 3,300. Hasn't played over 20 minutes in any of the games that Howard missed, and I just don't really see that happening in this one, although this is a team that deploys three big men, Mirotic, Randle, and Davis, so maybe Scotty Brooks will have to change his tune. Over on FanDuel, I like Davis, I like Mirotic, I like Porter, and Johnny Wall all come in as pretty strong options. Not much in the cheap stakes here. You could potentially, if you think they're going to run Thomas Bryant more, he's a minimum salary guy, that would be one of your drop lower score tournament options over on FanDuel, so you could consider that. Onto the next game, the Dallas Mavericks and the Houston Rockets. No spread, no total, because there's a ton of injuries. Chrissy Paul and Gerald Green are both questionable for the Rockets. Paul with what D'Antoni called a hamstring, which is never good for this bloke who's missed so much time with hamstrings over the past season. And then for the Mavericks, Dennis Smith Jr., Luka Doncic, and Dwight Powell. It feels like Doncic has been questionable about eight times already this season. Hasn't missed a game, but he's continually listed as questionable, this time with an illness. So no spread at this point. Paul's at 7,900. He loves playing the Mavericks, but I'd hate to play him here. Just not a great scenario. While Jimmy Harden at 11,600, 89 points last time out, averaging 66 over the last five, an absolute cash lock in my opinion. Dennis Smith at 5,200 with the wrist. I wouldn't want to get involved with using him. While Jose Juan Barea, was it Juan Jose? I never remember which way those J's go. $5,000 for Barea, with Smith likely to miss, in my opinion anyway. I think Barea is a great option, averaging 29 over the last five in just 24 minutes. For the wings, Wesley Matthews is at 4,500. If Smith misses, and then if Doncic misses, there's great upside there for Wes. So I think he would be a great tournament guy to flick in if we hear some of that injury news come back in the negative. Doncic is at 7,400, just a 35-point producing monster. If he's ready to go, then I'm ready to use him in fantasy. Well, if Chris Paul's out, Eric Gordon at 5,800, and that's a big rise in his salary, $1,000 bump from where it was last game for Eric Gordon. With Chris Paul out, though, he's got the ability to get to that, but it doesn't make him as much of a no-brainer as what it would have had that price stayed low. Big men to take a look at: DeAndre Jordan at 7,100. I think that's a really rock solid floor. But Clint Capela is the guy we have to look at. 8,200 is his price. He's averaging 53 over the last five, playing a truckload of minutes. I think that for Capela, in a great matchup, a real positive one for him, should be looking at 45, probably 50 point upside here for big old Clint. Dwighty Powell's questionable. If he is out, Maxi Kleber at 32 could be a 24-point performance from Kleber. So if we hear that Powell is out, I do actually like Max at that $3,200 price point. On FanDuel, Wesley Matthews at 5,000, Harden at 11,600, and Capela at 9,200 are all really looking sexy. While Eric Gordon is a much better play on FanDuel, 5,500 for Gordo, he should be able to beat that, assuming Chris Paul sits out, which is what we're assuming at this point. DeAndre is at 8,000, not as much value for Jordan on FanDuel as what there is for him on DraftKings. The next game is the Orlando Magic and the Portland Trailblazers. No spread or total for this one either, because we don't know about Aaron Gordon and his back. The Magic, a really low-key fun team, probably should have beaten the Warriors. Yeah, out here on their West Coast road trip, beat the Lakers, almost beat the Warriors, and now try to take on the Trailblazers. Yusuf Nurkic and Seth Curry are both probable for the Blazers, so that's good news for those guys. At point guard, Lillard is at 9,000. He averages 50 against the Magic. I love him. That's a great price for Lillard. He should smash the absolute shit out of that. DJ Augustin at 4,300, giving you some solid numbers as well. Averaging 25 points over his last three games, had 31 against the Warriors. That is just rock solid. You know, go to work, bring in the 25 points, and then go home and sink some piss on your couch. 4,300 for DJ is a really, really good option. CJ McCollum at 7,200, I'll fade that. I don't like that price there at all. Johnny Simmons, 3,200 for John. He is the starting small forward. He is not good, but with Wesawundu likely out and with out of the rotation, and with the potential of Aaron Gordon being out of the game, I think 3,200 for John Simmons is great. Now, he might only get you 23 points, but that's plenty at 3,200. So I am in on John Simmons here, and I don't say that very often. Terry Ross at 4,400, an excellent GPP guy, while Fournier at 55 is a contrarian guy. Everyone's going to be off him because he's been terrible, but I think this is a real 30-point-plus opportunity for Fournier, and you could consider him, at least in tournaments. Other wings, Johnny Isaacs at 37. Love that price for Isaac for a start. But if Gordon is out, that is a must play cash play. That is so cheap. Last game, he had 23 points in 30 minutes without bringing anything defensively. He's got 40-point upside because of his ability to have three steals and three blocks. And if he gets a start and plays 34 minutes with Gordo out, he's going to smash that number. The Chief, Al-Farouq Aminu.
Sometimes it may be good, sometimes it may be shit.
He's been shit for the last few, 12 points last game, 4,600. Hey, why not? Roll the dice, throw him in a tournament. At least a good game's got to be coming at some point. Well, as Gordon at 7,000, not interested with a sore back and with his form, not great. For the big men, Nurkic at 6,800. I love this for Nurkic. Not worried about his injury at all. Big men have been putting up good numbers against the Magic. And speaking of good numbers, big men and Magic in one sentence, Nikola Vucevic, 8,300. Just comfortably racking up 52 a game over his last five. Very, very tough to pass on using Vuce in any scenario. That price is far from restrictive. It has gone up $500 reduce. But at 8,300, you got to look at Vucevic and consider him a significant cash option until further notice. Now, I was going to say if Nurkic is out, but I don't. Nurkic isn't even on the injury report, so we don't need to even worry about that. On FanDuel, I like Nurk, I like McCollum, I like Isaac, and I like Johnny Simmons as well. CJ at 68 on FanDuel is a much better play over there than what he is on the old DraftKings. The last game of the night, the Phoenix Suns on a back-to-back taking on the LA Clippers. The Clippers are favored by 12 points, and the total is 228. Another one of those huge spread games. At point guard, Lou Williams is at 5,700. He had 9 points last game. A lot of people will be scared of him. That could be your tournament entry point. While Shai Gilgeous-Alexander at 5,000, he's about a 22, 23-point guy, so I'm not really loving him at a $5,000 price point. Devin Booker at 8,800 is getting you 45 a night. Absolutely love him here in this one, getting those big assist numbers as well. This is a real chance for a 50-pointer for Dev, I think. Pat Beverley, Jamal Crawford, probably not. McCall Bridges at 3,500, a real bunch of stinkers in a row for McCall. I'm happy to get back on him. I'd use John Simmons in preference at 3,200, John Isaac at 3,700 for my sub $4,000 guys on DraftKings, but I think Bridges is going to have a decent enough game, although my confidence in that continues to wane. On the wings, the Rooster, 6,200 for Danilo Gallinari. This should be a 30-pointer, which is a really strong floor for Gallo. Hard to go past him. While Tony Warren Jr. at 65, another monster from him today, 39 points. His average over the last three is skewed by getting ejected against the Pistons, averaging just 28 over the last three because one of those was an ejection. So don't read too much into that. I think TJ is a strong, strong play. Trevor Ariza is the opposite of a strong play. The table, Montrezl Harrell, 31 minutes a night, giving you 40 points a night, 7,200. Lock him in. While DeAndre Ayton at 7,300, I think lock him in as well. I prefer Harrell to Ayton, but both of these guys are in that high 30s pretty much every night sort of a zone, which at 7,200 is relatively rock solid. A ton of good value options on this slate, especially on DraftKings. On FanDuel, Harrell and Avery Bradley actually at 3,700. I don't really think Avery Bradley's a good fantasy contributor, but give him 30-plus minutes, he should be able to get you 24 points, which is exactly what he did last game. And at that price, you've got to try and find value on FanDuel because they tighten that pricing real, real tight, and it's hard to find value. The table, Montrezl Harrell at 83, I think is a pretty good value play. While McCall Bridges at 42 is your nice GPP upside-y type of a guy. I don't mind the Rooster at 7,000 either, or DeAndre Ayton at 75, some value over for both of those guys. All right, let's look at the studs and values on DraftKings. My best stud is Townsie at 9,400, and the value play is Johnny Simmons at 32. On FanDuel, the stud is the table, Montrezl Harrell, 83, and the value is John Simmons at 4,000. For Yahoo, the stud is Clint Capella at 36, and the value is Wesley Matthews at $12. And then on DraftStars, the stud is Joel Embiid at 19,690, and the value is Rondae Hollis-Jefferson at 7,430. Guys, go ahead and check out today's sponsor, MyBookie, by using that promo code LOCKEDON for a dollar-for-dollar match up to $1,000. Follow me on Twitter at RedRock_BBall and the Locked On Network at LockedOnNBAnet. Subscribe, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spotify, and on YouTube. If you listen to the podcast, go watch the YouTube video as well. If you watch on YouTube, go download the podcast. Just give me those extra numbers. It's a great free way that you can help support the show. Leave a comment, hit subscribe, click the bell. You know all the great ways of helping out this show. Guys, we are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Dr. Michael Malone.